Survivor, but it's part of one of the aspects you bring up. Previous winners.
And we don't talk about
why I didn't get your reference.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, so welcome to a podcast, everyone. Now we're really starting the podcast. Can everybody introduce themselves, please? Let's go around the table, starting with the boss.
I am Dr. Sarkarski, Andy Sarkarski, director of the film certificate program, film studies program at FIU.
Hi, I'm Valerie, but I also go by Val. Hi.
I'm the master of mics, bro of films, Francisco Ramos.
Hello, my name is Julia. I'm a newbie in film. Ready to get my film card revoked.
You're a newbie in film?
A newbie in film. I don't know anything.
Oh, a newbie in film. A newbie in film.
Off to a great start.
Last but not least,
I am Frankie. I am also a newbie in film.
How are we all doing? Good weekend?
Yeah.
Good.
Busy.
Well, busy. You know, I mean, most of us were together this weekend. So,
yeah,
you
so
know.
You already know the answer to that.
Yes.
Yeah, we just came back from the FIU 48-hour film challenge. Where students here had 48 hours to
make a short film.
Yeah, to brainstorm, write, produce a film.
Yeah, a short film for the
Panther Film Festival, I believe.
Yes. So the Panther Film Festival happens in the spring every year. We'll have our third annual Panther Film Festival, student film festival, coming up this spring.
To clarify, we're in October 7th, recording this October 7th, 2019. For those time travelers in the future who are listening to old episodes of the podcast.
Hello, time travelers.
So we have a pretty heavy topic. Not necessarily heavy topic, but we have a
medium weight topic today.
We're talking about social responsibilities of film. This episode's coming out around the time of the 2019 Joker release, which has sparked a lot of controversy, especially here in the U.S. We actually had one of
our interns,
well, more than one of our interns, see the film
around opening night,
and they can like
give us a quick overview of what the movie's about.
Okay, well, I mean, if you want like a quick synopsis, it's about Arthur Fleck and the hardships he goes through to become the Joker. So that's what it's about.
who's starring in it?
Joaquin Phoenix. He does a great job. His acting is out of this world.
His performance is top notch.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's very terrifying and convincing.
What were your knee-jerk reactions to the movie? Like, roll credits, walk out the theater.
The movie theater lights
sting your eyes.
What are your thoughts?
I had very mixed feelings on it because it's not an easy film to watch. It's very good and very well made, but I don't know if I liked it, even though it is a very good movie.
I felt the same way. I felt that everything was so well done, and you could tell that there was a lot of planning involved, but going in there not knowing anything, no fan of comic books, not a fan of Batman or anything, just going in, it was kind of hard to watch.
As a Batman fan, like, and comic book reader, it was still extremely hard to watch, and I think it's because of the way that the violence in the film is portrayed, and I think the way it kind of glorifies and justifies hyper-violent men.
I guess it's a good time as any to kind of like go over what the controversy is, in case maybe now in the future we've solved it. The controversy surrounding the movie is that I actually pulled up
an article for
Times that I think summarizes it pretty well. Critics are calling it dangerous, deeply troubling, and they say that the film itself tries to sympathize with quote unquote the wrong kind of people.
These people
have a particular name under internet as incels or involuntary celibates, who characterize like themselves or like the personalities
as
They've been ostracized by society, or more specifically by the opposite sex, and they are now like they've like internalized a lot of that hate. And
yeah,
externalize violence.
Yeah, that's what Joker is about. Definitely, I think it definitely appeals to that kind of audience, and yeah, almost like it makes excuses for that kind of person. It is kind of troubling to see the way that it is portrayed, because I think it tries to make some kind of social commentary about how people who are mentally ill or who might be struggling with the way that society treats them, and it kind of takes things that typically you would agree that those are problems that our society has and kind of uses them to justify like these mass shooter types.
Yeah, that was also a big issue because I forgot exactly when the Dark Knight
released in the U.S.,
but there was a shooting at a
film during opening night, and
that also kind of correlates
to the Joker release because
a lot of people seeing it that as those two events as being tied,
like the Joker, like this.
Actor who's been like broken by society, then like taking
revenge on society.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think the movie theater where the shooting happened, I think it's called the Aurora movie theater. They actually like had no Joker showings for it, just because of the severity of the issue.
Yeah, and a lot of the families actually wrote a letter to the director of the Joker
from the Aurora shooting.
Like ask him to like reconsider or like think about
the implications that the film might have on on the current
culture.
At least for me, I was completely unaware of this controversy, and I didn't realize it until I walked out of a theater here in Miami, really close to FIU, and there were 7 cop cars just lounging there, and I was like, "What?"
That's kind of interesting. We have somebody here who was very well aware of the controversy,
and they came out with mixed feelings, and somebody
who. They don't know about the controversy. How did you feel specifically?
I walked in there not knowing anything, just going in to watch it because there was all this hype around the film. And like I said previously, it was really well done. The cinematography was amazing. The performance was just outstanding. And the film score was just out of this world. But like Valerie said, it's sort of taking these people who feel ostracized by society and glorifying them in a way that kind of justifies their actions. So it was pretty disturbing in that sense. It wasn't gory. It wasn't scary. It was just very disturbing.
Yeah, I agree. It was very disturbing. And I think it's kind of like a tricky issue to talk about because I think I struggle with like, obviously you don't want to be censoring movies either. So like it's kind of difficult to find that balance between, you know, how much violence can you show in a movie in a way that isn't like socially irresponsible? But also like, I don't think it's fair to like, for example, you said people were writing letters to the director. I don't know if you can really like justify that kind of censorship either.
But I also think it goes into the parents as well, because I walked in the theater, a couple mm-hmm. showed up and they had a 4 or 5, 6-year-old little girl come in and I was disturbed. So imagine the little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just the filmmaker, but also the parents and the people who go into the film. They should know what they're getting into.
And there's a difference there because you understand the complexities of what you're looking at. You understand that it's not just like violence and like there's like meaning behind the violence or there's a narrative behind the violence. Maybe a 4-year-old doesn't really
understand. And kids nowadays are like little sponges. They absorb everything. And if you're showing them constant violence, it's only a matter of time where it might possibly reflect on themselves as well.
Right. Or at least like desensitize them and kind of like lower the severity of these kind of violent situations.
Let me pose a question to the table. Do you guys think that films have a social responsibility to the public to these kinds of controversies
or
handle them in a different way, maybe have a warning message at the beginning of the movie? What do you guys think? Do you think
films
have a responsibility to the public?
Well, this has a warning message at the beginning, doesn't it?
Not that I saw.
Isn't it rated R?
Well, yes. Yeah,
I did get carded.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like, I mean, we already have a system for like giving warning messages. People ignore our system for giving warning messages. So it's like, mm-hmm. I mean, there was another, I can't remember what it was, but there's another movie I was reading about that appeared on, and this was just, you know, like Netflix or something, and people talking about it. And someone said, you know, this movie should have a warning message. And I mean, there is a warning message.
The rating.
There's a rating, and then the rating specifies what the content is that gave it that rating. So.
And then isn't on Netflix, just to use that example, when you put a film or a show, whatever it may be, it comes out in the beginning. It shows the rating and what possible scenes might come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe that rating system, do you guys think is not doing enough? Maybe
you think it should be modified
to include stuff like, hey, this movie might show, like, have like social repercussions.
Convince you to go commit a mass atrocity.
But what? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know.
Right. I mean, I think like specifically regarding the Joker, I think it's not so much an issue of like, was there enough warning? I think it's more of a thing with the director, Todd Phillips, and I think the way that he chose to portray the movie specifically, because there is kind of like this very like obvious kind of interest in like this hyper violence and really including long violent sequences that don't necessarily contribute more or less to the plot. And so I think that that's where the issue lies, not so much in like this movie should have a warning, but it's really kind of like a directorial issue, I think. And like, well, I'm writing a Joker review, but looking back at Todd Phillips is like his list of movies he's done. Most of them are comedies, but I found it very interesting. His first, the first film he ever like really directed was a documentary on a really notorious and controversial punk artist named Gigi Allen. And he was like very well known and notorious for being extremely violent, for like assaulting women on stage and doing just really extreme actions. And I think so, like, I think in the case of the Joker, I think it's more of a directorial issue, like, versus.
He also did a doc on a frat house, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did do
and
that.
Of course, you know, the Hangover movies,
right.
That stuff, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Back to the Hangover
movies. Right, yeah. His lineup is like War Dogs, like the. Yeah, the Hangover series and stuff like that.
Old school.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that his first like serious drama film is The Joker. But yeah.
I was actually doing some research on like, you know, movies who like that sparked like a lot of controversy. And back in 1972, Stanley Kubrick
directed A Clockwork Orange, which is
also seen as hyper-violent, you know, troubling. A lot of people, especially in the UK, thought that it would bleed people, it would inspire people to commit acts of ultra violence. So that movie also at the time held a lot of controversy in its release. But
apparently
now it's,
there were a couple of copycat incidences as a result of the release of Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, I saw that too. And people saw it, like I'm saying, a quote from one of the biggest attractors said this movie is violent and it dehumanized the protagonist's victims while highlighting the suffering of
said protagonist.
I don't know if you guys know the story of
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of it, or most of it.
I'm not familiar with it.
Definitely not.
For those who are not familiar, it's in almost like a dystopian sort of future. Like,
not almost.
A dystopian. I'm not exactly sure when the book takes place, like time-wise.
Like timeline?
But dystopian future. There's like these ultra-violent gangs who are like hopped up on drugs,
who
go around and
just doing like
vicious acts of violence and people on the street, literally anyone they see. And the movie follows one of these thugs. And part of the movies, he also gets captured and by the government and goes through like a rehab process where
brainwashing.
They brainwash him to try to, you know, like leave that, those violent tendencies. Mm-hmm. But they end up forcing him to attempt suicide, which then part of the plot is it like reverses the brainwash and it
leaves off kind of
ambiguous note as to whether or not he goes back to violence or not. But again, a character who's been,
you know, like he's
rebelling against society as well. Well, his society. Like I said, it was also very controversial, but it's also now seen as like one of like those classics, you right. know, like right, one right. of those like top 50 movies you need to watch before you die,
something like that.
Mm-hmm. It pops up on a lot of people's lists.
Yeah, that's why. Like, I don't think there's any easy answer or, like, explanation for, you know, maybe how we can kind of fix this issue, if it's even really an issue. Because, like, filmmaking is an art, and so it's really going to come down to, like, what the director or the person who's creating this art is, like, what their intention is and what they want to do. And I don't think there's an easy out to whether these films like incite violence or incite people to do violence. Like, I don't know.
Personal opinions. Do you guys think films like these incentivize people or
push people past that like line to like copycat?
There are some, I will admit that there are some people who are like already troubled,
who see this more like
a rallying cry or something.
Sort of like inevitably.
Yeah, like they would have, whether it had been the movie or they would have found like a trigger somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Because they were already, you know, they were already troubled. But do you guys think these movies
culturally push us
towards more of like a violent culture?
I think it all just depends on the person. Because at the same time, the film is very disturbing, at least for Joker, it's very disturbing. But at the same time, it makes you think about how you're treating people and you never know what a person's going through, and you yourself could be a trigger to someone else. So I think it's also just showing you that you just have to be careful, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to keep saying that it's complicated. I don't think there's one like right answer. I don't think that, I mean, I agree with what you said, that I think there are certain people who are already like predisposed to doing something like that. And I don't think that we can really fully blame movies, or like other people will say video games and TV shows and things like that. We can't really like solely put the blame on like those on media for inciting that, those kind of actions from people. It is disturbing to like think that, like, again, in the case of Joker, like that the director kind of wrote all of this out, or the writer wrote all of this out and kind of thought it was a good idea. But I don't think it needs to be banned or anything like that. If, you know, like if someone's predisposed to doing something like that, they're gonna, like you said, they're gonna find a way to do it one way or another.
Doctor, any thoughts?
I mean, I wouldn't even put the question in terms of, you know, is this going to be a trigger for someone to go out and commit acts of violence? I mean, who knows? Maybe not, you know, but I would want to frame that question in terms of, does this justify certain kinds of mindsets or outlooks on the world that don't need justification? You know, is it irresponsible in the ways that it does that?
I think it's a little irresponsible to create something like that and not be aware of like the
repercussions.
Like, the culture. Like, yeah. I understand movies take a lot of time, even years, to write,
produce, and, you know, like release. But I feel like it's also a little insensitive to
be aware of what's going on
and making the choice to, you know, like,
or maybe. It's hard to say. Maybe they made an active choice to, like, hey, let's do this, or
didn't notice.
But
I don't think they didn't notice.
No, yeah. I mean, like, if you see the Joker and like, I don't want to say any spoilers, but there's, like, a line at the end of the movie that very much, like, makes it clear what the intention here was.
Yeah.
And the intention was to kind of, like, explain why people, like the Joker, commit these violent acts. And I think, like, that's the dangerous thing, that that this movie kind of tries to explain why people do these things. And I think by trying to, like, humanize them and, like, and make them empathetic, I think it removes some of the, like, you know, like, you made a decision, right? Like, if someone commits violence like that, you made that choice, and I don't think you can, like, I don't think it's right to kind of try and justify that or take that away when you're, like, you know, killing people and committing violent actions.
So, I mean, that's, like, that's interesting to me, because you used two different phrases for that. One was, you know, that it justifies it, but then the other phrase you used was it humanizes these people, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, if you humanize someone who does horrible things, are you justifying that person doing those horrible things?
I think, to some degree, I'm not saying
that this movie doesn't do both, but I see it, like, explained in terms of, I mean, I don't want to dehumanize anyone.
Right.
You know? And so to humanize any action, I mean, to me, that just seems like a good thing if you can manage to do it well. You know? I mean, because if you humanize people's decision-making processes, you can actually maybe understand those decision-making processes. And that seems to me better than not wanting to understand or recognize what those decision-making processes are in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think, again, like, I think the way that Joker attempts to do that is really clumsy, and I think that's where the problem lies.
Yeah.
Because, like, I agree, I think in trying to solve these kinds of problems, you do need to kind of understand where people are coming from so that you can, like, you know, try and stop the issue before it gets any bigger. So I do agree with that, but yeah, like, I don't think that the Joker handled that very well. I think it
struggled.
Yeah, it did it in a very clumsy way that that I think removed
any kind of expect from Todd Phillips.
Well, yeah, I mean, he did direct all of the Hangover movies. So
clearly, works of great empathy.
Yeah, and clearly he's good at writing characters that make good decisions.
I want to ask you something. As a fan of both the comic books, and did you like the Nolan trilogy?
Yeah.
Batman. How does this film stack up to the Joker's canonical comic book origin? Like, how does it differ?
Oh, I mean, like, the thing with the Joker is that he has a bunch of different origin stories, and they, like, it's all, with comic books, it's very pick and choose, and you kind of just, like, what you like, you make your own canon. But I think the problem with the Joker, more so, is, like, the way that it represents characters who are supposed to be good, like, the good guys, and I think it kind of makes them all, like, assholes, for lack of a better word. And so, you know, because of that, there's, like, no good guys in Joker, so there's no foil for his kind of behavior or anybody to say, like, what you're doing is wrong and not okay. So, and I think that that's why the film kind of struggles with trying to get, like, you know, any kind of good message across. But I also think it lacks a lot of the fun that, like, even, like, I don't know, the Joker is charming in his own, like, evil kind of way, and, like, yeah,
the clown prince of crime, right, is, like, you know, super charismatic. Yeah,
yeah, like, yeah. There's something fun about the character, and I feel like if you watch this, like, this adaptation of it, I don't like him. Like, I don't want to, like, you do not want to be around Joaquin Phoenix's Joker at all. He's terrifying and off-putting and unsettling from, like, beginning to end, and it's, like, really great to watch, and I feel like when the movie just kind of lets him be awful for the sake of being awful, it's like more entertaining than, like, sitting there and trying to understand why he's the way he is, which I get it, the movie's a character study, but, like, I wish that the movie, like, would lighten up a little. I think it tries to make the Joker too serious, and so it's just much more fun to watch, like, Joaquin Phoenix dance around in, like, a dirty apartment, like, than
I think that's also part of, like, the actual character of the Joker. Like, I feel like in a lot of the media, both, like, film and beyond, since his backstory is so ambiguous, mm-hmm. like, It's hard to human. Like, I don't think the Joker is one of those characters you can humanize because he exists more like an act of nature rather than a person.
Right, and I think that's like why the film kind of struggles, because it does try to humanize him and like, you know, explain his actions, and like the Joker is just much more fun when he's just like, you know, a chaotic evil kind of character.
Comparatively, I feel like that's like a lot of people are comparing it to the not comparing it but contrasting it with the Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker, who was a lot more ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the Dark Knight Rises being about Batman,
mm-hmm.
The Joker steals the movie, steals the show.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that you never learn about like where he's really from, but that's part of the reason why it works so well in that movie. I feel like too, because he acts more of just chaotic evil.
Yeah, like embodiment of chaotic evil. He's just doing things because he feels like it. Like, and that to me, that's a much more entertaining villain than like, oh, I have to feel so sad for Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. Like, oh. Someone was mean to him a couple of times. Well, people are pretty awful to him in the movie, but still, like, I just let the Joker be awful because he's awful. Like, I don't need an explanation.
What are your thoughts on the Killing Joke?
Oh, well, that's... I didn't see the movie, so...
No, the
I don't think we can talk about the arc it because it's not a movie.
I mean, I saw the animated
edition of
The Killing Joke.
I'm not a big fan.
The Killing Joke is similar to... Oh, I haven't seen Joker, but from what I hear, similar to Joker, it shows, like, the day that the man before the Joker became the Joker. Like, what happened to him that day, I believe, like, his wife died and a bunch of other stuff. I don't want to spoil that either, but... similarly, it also shows, like, it tries to humanize the Joker and ends up just...
Yeah, I mean, I don't care. I don't need the Joker to be humanized, for me, at least.
So, do you think, like, opposite? Like, let's look at the opposite of this. Do you think that films are responsible for... like providing us with good morals? Like, does the Joker, like, if we turn the story of the Joker around a little bit more, right?
If we change the narrative
and we humanize him less, right? And we make it more of a, like, don't do this. Like, don't be like the Joker. Do you think it would have worked better that way?
Yes. I'll let someone else answer. I've been talking a lot.
I mean, in a sense, no one would want to be like the Joker, so I don't know. I haven't seen the film, but I couldn't say definitively that trying to paint the Joker as a person no one wants to be is sort of like, no one wants to be the Joker in the first place. It's sort of like, he's a fun character to watch.
You'd be surprised how many people identify with Joker. Like, non-ironically.
And this Joker movie is for those people.
In a similar way, a lot of people identify with Batman, and a lot of people would argue that Batman is also like this character you should identify as, because, you know, he's out there at night dressing like a bat. He's also not like well off mentally.
So, fair point. So I'll jump in here just about some of the assumptions. I mean, how and why people identify with characters in movies, I think, is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have a movie with good characters, people are going to have opportunities to identify with a lot of different characters in a lot of different ways, and they're going to sort of make those decisions based upon whatever they make them. So I think to me, a movie's responsibility is to have good characters, and that's it. Well, I mean, I you know, not that's it, but, you know, I mean, I think that offers a variety of opportunities. A B, I don't know that, like, the joy of a movie, there's some extent to which identification is part of a process of being immersed in a movie. Mm-hmm. There's a large extent to which it's not also, though. And it seems to me that identification is kind of like the easiest and kind of gateway into, you know, an immersion into the kind of an experience a movie or other kinds of art can offer. And so while it's, you know, the ideas about identification are important, they're definitely not the be-all and the end-all of, you know, the idea of watching movies and what happens in the process of watching movies. I mean, that's part of what we're talking about here, right, is the idea of there's a danger that certain kinds of people are going to identify with this character and as a result act out in the way that the character on screen acts out. And so that's, you know, I mean, that's a thing that happens in the process of experiencing art. But it's also not the only thing that can or should happen, you know. I mean, I think that there are movies that, for me, that are just filled with unattractive characters that are fantastic movies. I don't identify with any of them. Well, since we're talking about the Joker.
Yeah, give us an example.
Yeah, all right. So since we're talking about the Joker, you know, the King of Comedy, which is you know, an influence on the Joker. And there's no character in the King of Comedy who I identify with. You know, Rupert Pupkin is, you know, a sort of is nuts. You know, I can't remember the Sandra Bernhardt character's name, but so is she. They're both like groupies. In addition to having other kinds of issues, the Jerry Lewis character is absolutely alienating. And so, you know, there's just like all of these unpleasant characters, and I want to be none of them, you know, and yet absolutely adore that movie.
Yeah, I think when I got out of Joker, I feel like I had kind of a struggle because I can acknowledge that there's like good things about it that I really enjoyed. But I feel like I was just so disconnected from the characters in a way that I don't know if me personally with that movie, I could enjoy it. But at the same time, I struggle because there are moments where it's like really good. It's hard not to give credit to like Joaquin Phoenix for being that way in the movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is often, you know, I mean, I think he's very good at putting in performances that are not identification kind of performances, and yet are still fascinating.
Yeah.
The Master, you know, I mean, I don't know if any of you saw that, but he was fantastic in that. And that's another movie that's just filled with, you know, awful characters who you don't really want to be or be like, and yet is absolutely, to me, compelling.
Yeah.
Is there a character, like, again, for the table, is there a character you guys have identified with before in the past or identify with that you know maybe you shouldn't identify with, but you still do?
Ooh,
Batman.
Batman? I love Batman.
Batman, I get you. I really understand Batman because, you know, it's part of, like, the lust of being, like, a superhero, like, having that power, having that freedom, right?
Sort of like a childhood thing. I don't know.
Right, but also, like, I mean, we're not supposed to be talking about TV shows, but, like, in the animated series, like, he's a good guy. Like,
I'll edit that part out.
Yeah, just edit, yeah. But, like, he's genuinely, like, interested in making Gotham better for, like, its people and, like, and things like that. So, I don't know. I don't think Batman's a bad guy necessarily to relate to. He does do crazy things, I guess, though.
Like, I feel like if you look at it at a surface read, like, characters like Batman or Joker are easy to watch, but the minute you start to, like, get too deep into their backstory and too realistic, it all just, like, gets too, like, you start to, like, I don't know if I really like
this. Wait a second.
Does anyone else have an answer? Yeah, this is a quick callback to Dr. Chigarsky's history of film class. I identified a little bit with the protagonist of Double Indemnity.
Walter Neff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so much because, you know, he murdered someone, but more for, like, the fact of, like, he you know, he fell for someone and he got in over his head, sorry. Yeah, English is not my first language. He got in over his head, you know, things got out of hand. And, you know, like,
I've been there.
Not to the extreme, let me clarify.
Oh, so you haven't murdered somebody?
Yeah. Yes, correct.
Yes, you have?
Yes, I have not.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes, I haven't murdered someone?
Correct.
Should I be worried?
That's I gotta go.
Putting things, I don't know.
Whoa, look at the time now.
So I know, also it's like an old movie, so there's a lot of sexism in the movie. So maybe, I know, like,
I know, like, on like a certain level, I really shouldn't identify with a character like that, despite the fact that he's also very charismatic.
Do you think Walter Neff is very charismatic?
I thought he was slick as hell. Like,
okay. All right. All right. I can see that.
He was like clever. He comebacks, you know.
I see.
So yeah, at a surface level, I knew I shouldn't identify with a character like that, especially now. But I still can't help it. Like, I'm like, yeah, I feel you. Like, I've been there too.
You're not gonna get caught, baby, because I'm gonna help you do it.
I did hate the way he said "baby." Like, it felt more like a script. Like, it felt like somebody else wrote that line for him. It felt like he didn't actually say that.
Isn't that what script writers do?
Yeah, I get that, but I mean, like, I feel like the character. That was a weird character choice.
Okay.
But like Walter Neff, right? Neff's character wouldn't say that. At least in my headcanon, he wouldn't say that.
Your headcanon. Yeah. Right. Okay, I don't have an answer.
Like, you're the one who identifies with him, so.
So you know best.
Yeah.
I know what kind of freedom of expression. We all just have to sit here and be repressed.
Just be like this, I'm like in those like kindergarten photo shoots.
The mics are hot. Just letting you know, hot
That's
mics.
Right good.
You what?
The mics like are hot.
Like,
white people.
What?
That's what it is. Protestant people from the north are
called wasps. Yeah.
White Anglo-Saxon persons.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
No, like,
huh?
That's what they're called. Yeah.
Yeah, wasp.
White Anglo-Saxon person. Mm-hmm. Oh. People.
Is that offensive? No.
I just didn't know.
I just
I live in a bubble.
Yeah, I know. Just kidding.
For those sharp ear listeners. We have a new guest on this last segment of the podcast. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Am I introducing myself with my nickname?
Your name?
Your regular name.
Oh God, my regular name. Okay, my name is Fada.
Wait, what are we doing?
We're adding another 20 minutes to the first podcast.
Oh, so we're not supposed to be all like happy now.
Yeah, this is somber. This is very somber. Solemn. I caught.
Fuck. Repressed.
Did you just? I can bleep it. You don't have to say it. I can bleep it in post. We were talking about the social responsibilities of film.
Oh, we were using Joker
the controversy
as an
behind
example.
The Joker.
Yeah. Oh.
Welcome to the NPR podcast. I'm your host, Herringbone Porter.
Is this going on the panel?
I don't know.
I'm going to be very disappointed if this isn't in the podcast.
Dr. Andy gets last.
It's supposed to be like the bloopers.
Pod.
Like pause up.
Podcast.
There's a lot of banging on the table. I don't like it. Don't make me kick you out. I'll cut you out of the podcast, so it just sounds like we're talking to nothing.
No,
you're not kicking her out.
Yeah,
over my everybody. Dead body.
I'll just do the uproar.
I'm gonna slam as much as I want
if she wants to.
It's just gonna be pure table.
On all these levels.
All right, let's proceed.
Sorry.
Ida, you had a lot of opinions about the Joker.
Not about the Joker. About social responsibility.
Oh yeah.
Please enlighten us.
Okay. Well, no, I don't enlighten people, but I will say that I saw Hustlers yesterday, for example, and I was like super into it, like had a very, felt very connected, especially J-Lo and Constance Wu, the solidarity and like the sisterhood between them really moved me. And so very ironic that the sisterhood that they actually showed in real time as far as the women who inspired the true story of Hustlers, they inspired the story of Hustlers, were not compensated, were not financially just like rewarded or like even like acknowledged, right, for their role. And it's just like, I don't know, you guys can interject. I can take it one layer deeper, but we can like, it just felt like a performance,
right?
You know?
Yeah,
performative sisterhood.
I think it's kind of like a recurring issue that happens in a lot of the movies that we get now that try to kind of like, you know, be feminist and things like that, in the sense that they don't sometimes it really is. It's just like performative, and it's there's no real like, I don't know, like there's nothing really there. And I think it's kind of like in a way it's good because not good, but like so. It's a two-sided coin because you're still putting out this movie that has women of color in it.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, yeah, you're not compensating or helping the actual women who, you know, contributed to this.
Well, yeah, it's just I feel so like toyed with, you know, mm-hmm. like I feel like, oh yeah, emotionally, like we're all suffering in like this capitalist system or late capitalism. And then like I'm like craving, you know, like solidarity and like sisterhood, and then you're gonna sell it to me, and then I'm gonna fucking cry, and then I'm gonna find out that like the real Ramona never got compensated. And so it's just like, yeah, I don't know, I don't want to go see movies like that where like there is no integrity. It just like kills the vibe for me. Like had I known that, I would have waited till like I could access it for free somewhere. And I guess the second layer to that is, like, I think they're the exact, like, it seems like the whole message of the movie about capitalism just, like, completely went over the heads of, like, Cardi B and J-Lo and, like, Constance Wu.
Cardi B's in this?
Yes.
Yes, she's in it.
And so this is the anecdote to the Cardi B part. So I saw Cardi B, like, on The Ellen Show. And Cardi B was saying how, like, acting is, like, such hard work and it's such a drag and blah, blah, blah. And then Ellen's like, so you're not going to be doing movies anymore. And then Cardi B's like, yeah, but I like the paycheck, you know? And so, like...
Ouch. That said feminism back. How much?
Well, like, I don't... The thing is, like, I don't want to blame Cardi B, like, in the sense, like, we're all, like, victims of capitalism here. Like, we all are made to feel, like, financially insecure. Like, and that's the whole point of the movie. Like, they're, like, accumulating, like, they're doing all these, like, heists and stuff, like, getting, like, accumulating wealth. But then it's, like, at what point do you stop? At what point do you feel secure enough in this system? And it's, like, you never do. I think that was the whole thing. Like, until they got caught, they wouldn't have stopped. Like, they would have kept going, even though Constance Wu's character was, like, having, like, PTSD nightmares about, like... You know, one of the people that they hustled had, like, was not able to, like, make, like, mortgage payments or, like, pay for his, like, son's autism treatment or whatever. And so at that point, Constance Wu started having, like, these nightmares and started, like, questioning whether it's just, like, they, you know, they're part of a system that they're made to hustle and make money to, like, whatever. And it's, like, fair. Because the money that's, like, funneled into them through, like, the strip clubs or, like, their, like, operation is stolen money, essentially, right? Wall Street bros basically are, like, stealing money from everybody. And then, like, they're just, like, making money off. They're, like, taking this money that is stolen. So it's, like, at what point, you know.
It's a complicated, like. Are they necessarily in the right? Are they in the wrong? When the money they're stealing from is technically legal, but not in the right, morally?
Right, right. Because, like, it's talking about the whole housing. Well, whatever. I don't want to get too, like, economic here, but...
This is an economics podcast. You can get economic.
Like, but they're talking... The whole movie is about, like, hurt... At some point, Constance Wu character says, hurt people hurt people. And that's really what... why... Like, it's perpetuated, this cycle of, like, just trying to, like, take advantage and being opportunist. And capitalism happens is because we're just trying to survive and, like, we're hurting. There's just, like, a lot of pain. And so...
That's the message of the Joker, too, isn't it?
Can somebody hand a mic or push the mic over there? Don't drag it. Lift it. Lift it. Oh, no.
Or just speak louder.
Don't drag the mic.
The time for that comment has passed.
He said, wasn't that the message? He said, wasn't that the message of the Joker as well?
Joker people.
we talked about how, like, the Joker, it's hardly, like, a good Joker story, or, like, the character Joker should be hard to humanize because he is not
necessarily human, more like
a power of nature.
Because he's like
the embodiment of chaotic evil.
Right.
So.
But if he were to be humanized, right, like the way that the film intended it, right, it was to create like a, give him a story, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was what they were trying to, was that the message they were trying to?
I mean, well, like we discussed earlier, I think it tries to kind of, like it tries to explain why the Joker is the way that he is through kind of showing how society has failed him and like his mental illness and stuff, but the movie does it in a clumsy way and I think instead comes across as like justifying the actions of like really like hyper violent men.
Right. Okay. So right. So and I think Hustlers didn't do that in that respect, like I don't know, spoiler alert, I guess. But it was really moving to find out that J-Lo's character, Ramona, at the end, even though that they're, like, all, like, they're speaking to this journalist, Julia Stiles' character, and they're, like, ratting each other, like, they're just, like, revealing everything. They're doing an expose. I'm not sure. I guess there's just, like, financial compensation for it. And Ramona never talks shit about Constance Wu, which just, like, totally, like, she totally, like, you know, she told the journalist that Julia Stiles is playing that, you know, Constance Wu's character comes from, like, a very hard life. Her mother, like, abandoned her when she was a young child and gave her over to her grandparents. That she was, like, she had no friends. She was very much, like, isolated. Men, like, failed her and left her. So there was, like, a lot of abandonment. And so we find out, and she was, Constance was like, so she never talked shit about me at any point. She's like, no. And like, to take it further, one step, our last interview, Ramona was like showing me the things that she carried on her as like her most, cause she always carried like her most, precious valuables with her. And there's a picture of Constance Wu's character when she's like 12 or 11 that she carries with her still to post like friendship being over, and she says, oh, like I carry this picture because it's like, what if me and Constance Wu's character had known each other when we were young and abandoned, like the things that we could have saved each other from all this pain, you know, and like really supported each other. She does an amazing, like I'm not doing it justice obviously, but like I, at that point, I just lost it. And that's, like, yeah, when I stepped out right before the finishing credits because I didn't want, like, the men and family next to me, like, to put a face to the person that was, like, bawling and weeping next to them.
So you missed any after credits extra scenes?
Hustlers 2.
Yeah, Hustlers 2. Whatever. Like, yeah, I'm glad I actually didn't see, like, whatever after post-cred scenes because I was really disappointed that I was just, like, so toyed with. Like, yeah. They just totally commodified my emotions and
they take a
story. Like, they don't know how to.
Wait, so let me ask. Okay. If they had paid the women who the story was based on,
yeah,
you would feel that your emotions were not commodified?
Yes.
So the solution for the problems of capitalism is more capitalism.
No, that's not, like, because they're adhering to the principle of his sisterhood, which was like one of the main messages in the movie. You know, it's like it's not so hypocritical.
Okay, all right.
Because like surviving in capitalism is like one of the things that affects people.
We also briefly mentioned the Greatest Showman in a brief conversation between recordings. I have a big problem with that movie because it portrays P.T. Barnum as this like super charismatic, nice dude when he actually was like a terrible person. Like
the way that he treated. In the movie, he did cheat on his wife.
In the movie,
but is that enough?
In real life,
it's not enough. No,
in real
not
enough.
Most, no. What time period or era was like P.T. Barnum?
I want to say late 1800s.
Yeah, yeah, most men at that point had mistresses.
Yeah, but also he like the way he actually treated like his talent, like his performers.
Yeah,
terrible. Yeah, he didn't treat him the way he treated animals wasn't right. Like the way he treated like other people. So I have a problem with the way that the movie takes like an actual person, like
romanticizes them,
puts on like an attractive huge Jackman.
With amazing soundtrack.
With an amazing soundtrack, like, and they hide the fact, and they paint over history, and then people think that that's how actual P.T. Barnum was, in a similar vein to how if someone were to see Hustlers, and like oh this story of like these,
chosen family, like
yeah, like, but then you find out that the people it's based on had no compensation, yeah. And like. Like, they just romanticize the fun part, yeah. And not the actual reality of it, that there's repercussions to that.
They don't believe in it, really. I think that's, like, the biggest loss, is they don't believe in the message of the movie.
But I have one question.
Yeah.
And this is a film, right? I don't mean to be this person.
Go ahead.
But when you're making a film, your goal is to sell tickets, right?
Not always.
What about art?
But that's what I'm saying.
But these big companies and corporations, like, they're trying to sell tickets.
Yeah, but there's a way to do
capitalism
it.
Strikes
then maybe
again.
The balance is off.
Right. Like, I don't believe that individual, choice in capitalism really has any effect in the big scheme of things. For example, in, global warming, no matter how much the rest of us recycle, which is not to say I'm not condemning recycling, okay? But,
you heard it here. No. Plastic straws.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started. 70% of greenhouse emissions come from multinational companies.
Mm-hmm. Word.
So we could break our fucking backs, riding our bikes, not having plastic anything. But it would be like a drop in the bucket. Mm-hmm. So our
efforts are useless. So
no,
we shouldn't
so
do
it's
it.
The it that just goes to emphasize even more that it's companies and corporations and that they need to be the ones responsible for
making an effort.
I'm speaking with my body.
The poor table, what did it do to you?
But yeah. That's exactly why they need to be held responsible and accountable, and why we need to pressure companies to do that.
Companies including production studios.
Yeah, production studios. Yeah.
Big film companies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really like that hot take. Thank you for everybody for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. It was great.
It was awesome.
Thank you. One line.
Can everybody say goodbye?
Bye.
Adios.
I'm Batman.
And with that,
that's it.
And good night, guys.
That's a wrap.